I'm horrified by what's in his 50-gallon jug.
Spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We all about Lost Souls podcast. This is Vacation Episode 5. Season 2 is going to start officially probably next week.
Oh snap.
Yeah, depending on schedules and stuff. Because look, Leviathan's gonna be out in people's hands. People are gonna get to play some games, you're gonna experience all this stuff that's been kind of funneled out from the Wyrm community site and some other content creators. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Evening everybody.
Tandy Gates and Red Powell.
Hey everybody. Oh, just jumped the gun there.
I know, I'm out of practice. It's my bad.
That's actually one of my tests to just to make sure everyone's like dialed in, because I, you know, the order is always different.
I was just too eager. I'm sorry. Too eager.
That's quite all right. We're kicked back. The rules are a little bit different right now. We could relax. But I'm excited about the new edition. I'm actually going to be at the Calgary Games Con, probably when you're hearing this right now, in Calgary, in Canada. It's my first time in Canada.
Ever?
Yeah, first time ever.
What the heck?
Never made it up there. I'm excited to go. I'm going to be doing demos of 10th edition at the Games Workshop booth.
Well, I'm sad that I'm not going to be able to see you there because it's about 7 hours for me to drive out that way. So I'm not going to make it. I'm also going to be at Play on Tabletop. So
those are both good reasons.
Yeah.
Kill Team Live will be at this event as well. And if you're in the area and you can get by, you're going to be there anyway, and you haven't done Kill Team Live yet, highly encourage you to come by and do it. If you are a Warhammer Plus subscriber, you get at least one game for free because it's included in your subscription. And no reason not to. It's very fun. You're actually playing Kill Team with laser blasters, taggers.
It's so good. You have to take some scalps for us, Paul. Do not bring dishonor upon the house.
I'm going to try. Like, I'm not in that section, but I'm going to try to get over to that section and maybe try to like host some games like late in the evening.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I think
Have you ever like, how many times have you played?
Oh, several times.
Yep. Have you ever been like transported onto the Ventral Spirit and just been like, and gone to pistol whip somebody?
No, that is... There is, it's kind of like the safety things, you know, you can't run or whatever, but sometimes you got to get to that objective and you know the other player's coming. You got to kind of walk fast intently, but both hands on your tagger. It's fun. You know, you've played it. The adrenaline gets pumping.
It was so good. It was good as. We need to have a FTN versus, I don't know if anybody's worthy, but somebody can come throw down. We'll have an FTN versus some other plebeian show.
We'll see if any other show has the guts.
I'm kind of hoping that they introduce a new faction. I really like the guard versus the orcs thing, and I know that was like the first Kill Team deal, but I'm kind of hoping that they branch out some more stuff.
Fly Warriors would be cool, or was the other, did they do, was it the Crute Kill Team?
That is one of the things. But the cool things about the technology is that the orcs blasters fire differently than the Astromilitarum blasters. So there is like, you can put in personality and like faction stuff coded into the game.
That's so cool. Genius idea, to be honest.
And you're playing the missions. Like the one that we do is like it's a fun mission, but it's like the first mission out of the Kill Team book. That's your plan, capture and control. And you actually, you do have to eliminate your opponents, you know, or make them go into reset mode or whatever, only to free up you being able to take the objective. And that's where the points are scored, is actually taking and holding and claiming the objective. And it's a blast, no pun intended. I guess speaking of puns, and I don't want to digress, but I'll get there in a second. But we rolled out Kill Team Live, I guess, what is it, a couple of years ago at this point at PAX Unplugged. Like, I actually had the opportunity to, I got to promote it there at the place, and it didn't take much promotion because people want to come over and see what the lights and the sound and smoke and stuff was. So like,
it sells itself.
Kill Team Live. Like, where do I sign up? Like, get a ticket, come back and play. We'll get you set up. It's awesome. It was awesome. And, you know, it gets deployed at certain events around the country, around the globe, actually. I think it went to Warhammerfest like a few weeks ago. But anyway, it's going to be there at Calgary Games Con. It is incredibly fun if you are in the area or can make it down even for a day and you plan on doing it anyway. Check out Kill Team a lot while you're there. And, you know, come by the booth and say, what's up? Maybe play a demo game of the new edition of Warhammer 40,000. Digressing and terrible puns. When I was writing the post, the show notes for the previous episode, I was like, so if you want to come spice up your bases, listen to the hobby segment. I'm like, I did not mean to put that there because we were talking about
because there's spices on your base.
There is actual spice on the bases. I felt bad for like 20 seconds.
The melange?
Yeah.
I mean, you are a dad, so you are allowed to make bad puns. You have a license for it.
And then I put it in. I'm like, nope, that's staying in there. That's like, there's not taking it out.
I'll forgive you this once.
Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, I actually did a mass base making, and I was a little bit nervous because I was eyeballing the ratios before, and I eyeballed them again, and I got too much Mod Podge in there, and so I had to keep adding time and the burnt umber Liquitex color in there. And when I was putting it on, I couldn't necessarily remember if this is what it looked like when I was putting it on the last time. Because when you first make it, it's a very light colored, like it's mostly the color of the Mod Podge. But the Mod Podge dries clear, and then that's when you get the color of the burnt umber. And it's very, very burnt umber when it dries. But you don't know that until it's had the extended dry period.
So you just cross your fingers and hope it all works out.
Got to have faith in the process. And that's one of the things we talk about, having faith in the process to get you where you want to go with your hobbies.
With your Mod Podge adventures.
Yeah.
I just want excuses to say Mod Podge.
Everybody knows that there's a point in your hobby, you know, in your painting your miniature or your models or your units where it does look terrible. In your mind.
It is known. Yeah.
You just gotta keep putting paint on it until it doesn't look like poop anymore.
It's if I just get to the null oil step, if I just get to, you know, whatever.
That's usually it though, right?
Yeah.
It's usually the wash step, brings it all together, makes it all look reasonable, and like you're not an absolute amateur.
That's for us mortals that we need the wash to save us. And that's fine. It's fine. Other people out there, whatever that hurdle is, I got to the point with these bases, trust the process, get to the next step, and I'm actually pretty pleased with them. I went too heavy-handed with the vine work, so yet there's a lot of failure points in a new process or a new project. And I got a little bit too heavy-handed with the vine squirts. So I was trying to make them look more like vines with the puff paint, but now they've gone to look more like roots. I'm okay with it, but I was trying to get more viney, less rooty, but we're back to the root stage. Life's going to be fine, though. Still the jungle. There's roots in the jungle. But my three Tech Priest engine seers looking banging. Put some camo on it on their cloaks.
So right now I'm actually painting Ursula Creed, and for all the people out there who haven't built her yet, just leave the standard off the back. You can thank me later.
She got good rules.
I haven't even had the chance to check her rules because I've been commission painting to a very tight deadline. But I mean, she's just too cool. So I wanted to paint her. But yeah, I've definitely broken this standard off twice, and now it just has a big glue lump on the back, and I'm going to have to try and camouflage it with like paint. Just word of advice when you're building it, just leave that off until the rest of it's painted.
You got to know your weaknesses. You gotta be comfortable with your limitations.
Yeah, that's right. Just learn from my mistakes. Just thought I would share that. The more you know.
Habitual banner breaker.
Yep. I am a hurricane. I literally don't even know how most of my models have stayed intact over the years. Like, I drop them, and I am not careful at all. I'm very clumsy, and yeah, most of them are intact, and I'm gonna just pat myself on the back there. I don't know what I'm doing, but it's working.
For Patreon subscribers, at least first anyway, we're going to do a deep dive on the Astra Militarum. It's going to be the first faction that we jump into, because we all play them in some capacity, if you are new here.
Some capacity.
They are a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun. Being able to, you know, resurrect and bring back Sentinels, I've seen be a very successful play. And but, you know, if you want to learn more, yeah, see you on the Patreon.
There's, well, Ursula Creed lets you use a stratagem for free.
Does indeed. And there have been some spicy combos with the 20 Guardsman blob again, which praise be, happy to see it back in the game.
Yeah, there's, I'm looking forward to it. Like, would, and it's actually probably the ATC is coming up, and I will likely be playing Astra Militarum.
Ooh, nice.
Is,
I'm looking forward to you all doing the legwork and then informing me of what I should be playing.
I'm actually on the fence because once I look, I was only kind of tongue in cheek. Then we actually get into like the meat of the episode. It's is that once, you know, I'm like, I need three Dorns, I need three Lehman Russ demolishers, and then three Tech Priest Engine Seers, Lord Solar, and Ursula Creed. And then once you put all that in the list, you don't have points for your Sentinel combo that you're talking about, Adam. I'm like, dang. Sorry, that was me, not red. <Right there.
laughs> can we need to commission a t-shirt for each of the catchphrases of this show, and one of them has to be dang with just red like quotation marks and then red pal dash underneath.
But I'm pretty sure I was channeling him when I realized, like, man, I really want all the stuff. I want all the stuff. But I love being
resisting
in this phase
the
of the
urge.
Game. Yeah. Love being in this phase of the game again where we can, you know, you really like getting into kind of a, you know, get those big lights in your eyes about just wanting to take all the cool stuff. But I do think the Demolisher is one of the standouts.
The gun for sure is one of the standouts. And I think you pay a good amount of points for it. Like, you pay the right amount of points for it. It's not undercosted or overcosted. It's probably about right as one of the now premium battle tanks in the game, as the Lehman Russ should always be. Thank you very much. I've actually been pretty excited about some of the Baneblade chassis for the first time in a while as well, which is very nice to feel, as I've been down on them since, well, the second year of 8th edition. It's been about 5 years since I've been excited about a Baneblade chassis.
Nice. Well, this is, we're going to save some of this stuff for the deep dive we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, all the tanks, and there's like just a ton of options that are pretty playable, like where you can work in some indirect fire. Do you go all chimeras? How do you actually need Castrican or Scions better? Well, you know, the world may never know, but we will figure all that out really soon. The one thing I want to talk about is by the time everyone's hearing this, you will have, if you pre-ordered it or getting it, you know, sent to you, hopefully it gets there in time, the Leviathan box set in your hands. You're getting to see all the cool new models, you're getting to see the cool new rules, and you're going to get your hands on the Leviathan mission deck that comes in the box. Maybe your first opportunity to play with the decks. And so you'll notice in the rules, and you may have already spotted this on the download, the free download that's up on the Warhammer community site, is that it doesn't, well, it makes a point to call out that strategic reserves are much different than other types of reserves. And it even goes so far as to say, like, Deep Strike doesn't use the rules in that section. That's the section that has all the stuff about can't come in turn one, can only be so many points, and got it, you know, so on and so forth. No mention of having to be in by turn three, which is another big change. I'm only stating this to say those rules get put back in the Leviathan mission.
Yes.
So in the Leviathan games packet or little fold insert that comes with your box of mission, like rules and things that you can pick or flip, you know, through the course of the game, there's some tokens in there to be your objective markers. And there's also this little card, little fold up thing that says how to play Leviathan games. Read that. And in the declare battle formations section 8, it goes on to give you some more insight about reserves. Reserve units cannot arrive during the first battle round, and any strategic reserves or reserve units that have not arrived on the battlefield by the end of the third battle round count as having been destroyed, as do any units embarked within them. And then it goes on to say this does not apply to units that are placed in strategic reserves after the first battle round has started. So that functions very similarly to how it does in the previous edition of Warhammer 40,000, but it is different than it is the rules you're going to read in the base rulebook. So take note of that as you're building your list, and, you know, don't get any kind of weird gotcha moments with your first names.
Question. Those aren't the rules that we're going to be playing combat patrols with, though.
Correct. Yeah, combat patrol is going to have its own stuff.
Okay. Because we got, by the time that we recorded this, we've got you know, all the different data cards and stuff like that. But I didn't see in my downloads that there was like specific rules for gameplay. Maybe I missed it.
You might not have. I mean, and I kind of like, well, I mean, I will have to go and look at the combat patrol, but I do like how there is this kind of sense of different places to scale things and balance things maybe as time goes on. And, you know, what we saw with the let's take the previous edition as an example here, like going from the Arks of Omen to the Nephilim to the, you know, Nocturne, which was,
yep.
Thanks. Keep checking me on that.
I mean, I'm not even sure you're right. Sounds good though.
Yeah, it's right there, right? It's got to be. It's in the ballpark. But going like the tournament, using the tournament packs to kind of nudge things in different directions, you know, slightly, ever so slightly, as modifications on what is, you know, a solid set of rules.
I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. What I need to know is though, can Terminators come in on turn one when I'm playing Combat Patrol?
That's a great question. I can't answer it for you.
Dang!
Watch this space. I'm just saying, Sanguinary Guard, though, were like looking mighty tempting. They still are, but, you know.
When are they not?
Yeah. But it is something to look for. You know, this little insert is not just something to be discarded. It is a guide to how to set up your games for, you know, what will be the Leviathan mission packet, or games of Leviathan.
All right. Best model in the box. Let's go. Quickfire. Rapido.
The box.
Even. Yeah. It's not Gwyneth Paltrow or in any way to do
it's
with
it. It's in the box.
Exactly. Oh, right.
I mean, come on. It's got to be a Tyranid model.
My favorite, I think, is the Gravis Apothecary, which is a bit lame. But that's because that's my favorite. That's the one I wanted the most. It has to be the Neuro Tyrant for me.
I'm horrified by what's in his 50-gallon jug that he's carrying around.
it is a big jug, right? Why does it need to be that big? How many dudes are you expecting to lose on this mission?
Like, did he bring the jug?
For a second, I thought we were talking about the big brain on the tyrant. Like, man, you're calling that man's brain a jug? Just being unnecessarily cruel here, the Neuro Tyrant.
Beautiful.
The Screamer Killer has it for me. The Neuro Tyrant is cool, and I think of the brand newish stuff, it's like the most like Eldritch Horror type thing, but the Screamer Killer to me is my favorite still.
I am gonna have to go with the brain bug as well. As soon as I saw that, I was like texting my friend Alex, because I was like, can I paint that? I know you bought two. You have to have bought two. Let me paint one for you. So I'm gonna be painting one.
Nice.
Yeah.
I was going to say the apothecary, but then Adam opened his mouth, so now I got to find something different.
Scroll through.
Hey, but what if I said the apothecary?
Yeah, he wouldn't have sassed you.
There would have been a nice minute or so of me agreeing with you.
Yeah.
The Phobos Lieutenant, or whatever, is another cool one, too. Like, I like that pose. It's not too different than the other one, but it's got enough kind of like differences on it.
You know what? Yeah, you're right, Paul. I like the Terminator Captain.
It is good.
Because as a fan of World Eaters, I like simple options with the fewest options possible. And Terminator Captain really fits that.
Oh, no. Daggers in the Dark.
Is that bad? Did I say something wrong?
No, you did. It was perfect.
Look, just run it, people.
They're simple people.
So what do you think of Angron in this new setup?
You know, actually, like, looking at it, I like it. I do like the Blessings of Khorne mechanic. It's not as good in narrative construct, like, of the mechanic as what was previous with killing stuff, giving it to you. But I do like the Blessings of Khorne, you know, roll 8 dice, combos of what have you. I do think that it's kind of disappointing with the, and I understand, like, you don't want it to be out of control. Like, you know, say if some other army just had the ability to just maintain dice off to the side and just make up whatever dice they wanted throughout, like, there wouldn't be a point to rolling dice, right? But, like, with the Khorne, Blessings of Khorne, you roll those 8 dice and then you get up to 2 blessings out of it. And when it comes down to Angron, you know, if you get 3 sixes on top of that, you can bring Angron back in. And I like what they've done, because they put these balancing aspects to the Blessings of Khorne, and Angron's pretty tough. I think that everyone could agree he's definitely got some aspects to him that he's not horrible, not like, you know, he, for what he's costed at over 400 points, you know, it's not like he's 350 points and then fights like a knight or anything like that. He's over 400 points, and I think that that's pretty fair. I appreciate that they took a balanced approach with him. He does come back at full wounds, which I can appreciate that too. I was kind of surprised. I think his OC is like 6, and I was looking at it and I was like, you know, they could have just made his OC 8. Like,
oh,
they could have done that, but
they could have,
like,
they really
like 6 yeah. seems so arbitrary. Like, it's, he's okay, so there's some other stuff that's at, like, I think
it would
know,
be
Dreadnought's at like 5.
If he wasn't so angry, it would be 8. He's
but
distracted.
At 410 points or whatever, you know, maybe 8. You think a couple more times throwing in the number 8 would have made sense, but I get it. I understand.
Nice. Balancing the big models seems to always have been the challenge. It's like, how do you put these legendary epic things on the table and have them both match up to the lore and be something manageable in the game?
Right.
It's a tough task.
It is. I mean, there's a lot to it. And there's a lot of these things, like, how do you make Angron separate from Mortarion versus Magnus and so on and so forth. I get it. It is something unto itself. And so I appreciate that there's some deliberation to it. Again, you know, it's not like he's overcosted to the extent that it's out of play, and he's not so undercosted that he's an auto take to the point mandatory, that, you yeah. know, it would yeah break the game or something like that. Like, you know, maybe other things may be suffering for him.
Bright Knight.
Very strong right now. I've played against Mortarion, and he seemed to have pretty good rules.
I think Mortarion's got good rules, nowhere near enough attacks.
It seemed kind of easy. Well, I shouldn't say kind of easy. I was able to keep units kind of locked up with him longer than I thought, but he stood there. Like, I wasn't able to get him removed very easily.
Is it funny that the version of Mortarion I liked the most was the 8th edition one, where the most damage he did was just existing nearby you? You just, like, copped more and more and more mortal wounds the closer you got to him, and it just sucked. And I'm like, that's exactly the Mortarion, I think.
Mm. Again, it's kind of hard to blend all the mixture of all the things to encapsulate.
If he had had the same rules since then, we'd be into the 6th year of exactly the same rules for the same model, and that would be boring.
Yeah, right. Like, I think the Death Guard players are going to have to figure out, like, you know, what is the right code to compensate for their, like, slow movement, and then the way that movement works in this version now, like the bonus moves to be a little bit less permissive.
Yeah. I mean, it obviously rhymes with Blesh Glower. Mate, home run there by Adam. Thank you very much. Proud of that one.
You do have to figure out, like, what is the conditions, but I think that once people start playing the game and seeing the missions and then and choosing, like, maybe Death Guard end up being the ones that you want to pick the fixed objectives on and not flip randomly.
I mean, if you're not an innately fast book, it's a good plan. Go through them, find the ones that make the most sense to you. Just play those.
You know, do you look for things to teleport? Do you opt to go for, you know, things? If movement's important, do you find the thing? How can you double and triple down on the things with the whatever the most movement is, kind of thing? Or, as we saw in the game on the GW stream, was some Plague Marines overwatched like a wave server and blew it up. Like, there's stuff you can do to kind of compensate for, you know,
that particular stat.
But maybe
I really think everyone will come into the game differently and always wanting to be looking for the reasons to take certain things in their army, apart from what the stuff that looks cool. But just putting something in your army that is, hey, makes good use of the Overwatch stratagem, I think is a great place to start with your 9th edition lists. just like looking through your book, looking through your data sheets and being like, this is good at Overwatch, that's good at Overwatch. Overwatch is just that good. It's just so freaking strong.
The fact that it can be fired off in like multiple phases and you don't actually have to charge to make it work.
Yes, exactly right. Well, you can still do it in the conventional manner. As we discussed last week, it's probably the best generic stratagem that everyone has access to. And just having a unit in your army that's going to make good use of it, I think is really important, at least for the first press builds until we figure out what's really important this edition.
Yeah, it's got me looking at like a Wraith Guard and that kind of stuff.
Decides.
Can I ask your guys' opinion on something?
Yes,
please.
Okay, so there's a couple Custodes players in my area, and both of them were very disappointed because they thought that the jet bikes, there was no point in taking them anymore. And I just think that their like bombing ability sounds really good against hordes. Not
you able to unpack what they do for us? I'm not up to speed.
Do you want me to read it for you?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay, I'll just pull it up here.
Someone else's job on my ATC team to learn the Custodes.
So you haven't looked into it? So everybody says they're expensive for what they do because like their melee is toned down and their shooting is toned down. But this ability just seems really good. I don't know. Okay, here we go. Quicksilver Execution. Once per battle, after this unit ends an advance move, and they auto-advance 6 inches, you can select one enemy unit, excluding monster and vehicle units, that it moved over during that move. Then roll 1d6 for each model. Oh, it's in this unit. Wait, is this a dangling modifier? Roll 1d6 for each model in this unit. Is this my unit? Or is
that's
this
your
the
unit?
One just yeah. Went over. Picked one, you can select one enemy unit that it moved over during that move, then roll 1d6 for each model in this unit.
Yeah, in your unit.
Okay, well, it is a dangling modifier then, because the this would talk about the unit that you last talked about.
Modifier is dangling.
This is my English nerd coming out. I'm sorry. But yeah, never mind. Disregard.
So with that catch understanding,
all those dangling modifiers for us.
That's right.
Hell yeah.
Change your impression of the unit?
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so for me as a new player, this has always been my number one struggle with these rules because it is a bit confusing. And I think maybe because I come from that background, I read this stuff way too literally. But yeah, this is why I struggle with learning the rules. And everybody tells me, oh, you know, it's so easy to learn the rules. But like here, you've just seen me make a mistake in real time. So like, what kind of advice would you give to somebody like me who consistently makes these mistakes?
That's a great question. And I don't want to like pretend to be an expert on that or like teaching or learning or whatever. But that is a great question. Let's actually, to keep the suspense and the drama, let's take a quick break and then come back and talk about that in any capacity that we can from, you know, probably also having similar struggles. Hang on a second.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Thanks for joining us. Got the whole crew here right now. Although due to the powers of scheduling and different time zones, one of us might not make it to the end of this episode.
this is the Cluedo episode. Who was it?
It's not even just the end of the episode. He may just not make it.
was it Red with the legendary Dreadclaw in the in the kill team room? Was it Paul with the Black Rage in the living? Yeah, no.
I just want the Red Grail back. That's all I want. When we left off, we were actually talking about basically like demystifying and people coming to the table with different interpretations of like the way the rules work. And even though we're kind of in an information age where so a lot of the stuff is available, you know, we're still kind of reading it and playing it in our own bubbles and may find that when we get out into someone else's bubble or a different space that our interpretation might not be the prevalent one.
Yeah, I guess I want to advocate moving slowly when jumping into, you know, people you play regularly or not regularly. Everyone learns differently. Everyone absorbs information differently. We need to be very accepting that, you know, some people learn by playing the game. Some people learn by sitting, you know, with their rule book and going over it 100,000 times. And everyone of those and the myriad of others have their place in our community and deserve to feel accepted and part of. And man, I will not be asserting that a rule is correct for like 6 months. I'll be like, I think this is how it works, and I'm willing to be wrong at all times.
And I'm not saying like dice off everything either, you know, whatever. But, sure. But you can, you know, there are, you are, I think you're exactly right. It's like you are reading something with enthusiasm and anxious to get out there and put stuff on, new stuff on the table. Things are going to perform differently. Almost every phase of the game has a little bit of change to it, you know, including line of sight, movement, close combat, RIP psychic phase. You know, there's lots of stuff that is going to be different. Devastating wounds, the way things integrate with the units and stuff. Like, it's a really different world, you know, come, what is it, June 28th.
I think that's the big thing, is that it is a new edition. It is not, we can say it's the same game. It is in aesthetic and lore and whatnot, but there is... Sure. Does it have a fighting phase and a charging phase and a shooting phase and all that? But there's still enough that's different, and the release of the entire indexes and all. And there's a lot of folks, I would say, that just need to slow down and enjoy the learning experience that is the new edition. I think that it's okay for people to be wrong. It's okay to learn and come back from it. And, you know, in a lot of the competitive environments, we're still, I mean, I was looking at even, you know, the rule book says like 2,000 points should be a 3-hour game, and we don't need to rush these things. We don't need to push, make things more stressful than in some cases, you know, it already is. I mean, when you think about it, this again, we've talked about this before. It's a social engagement, right? It's not just a game. It's a back and forth. You're spending 3 hours with someone, and you want it to be enjoyable for both of you. And there's a little bit of pressure in that regard, because you don't want to let that other person down, right? Just as much as you'd hope that they don't let you down in certain regards. And so there's something to that. And I think for everybody, just having, you know, we talked about a little grace, a little bit of appreciation for why we're actually doing this. And I can tell you right now, if you're a hardcore competitive player, there's going to be other times for people to be up in arms about the most critical of competitive environments and times and things like that.
The towering rule and
right. There's all sorts of stuff that I think that people could better invest their energy right now versus, you know, does someone have the rules most correct at the very moment? Or is it a good opportunity for people to really keep learning the mission as it's coming?
This is slightly off topic, but it's one of those to where, you know, we talk about like the pregame table talk of what kind of questions to ask your opponent before the game starts. And I mean, are they still the same thing? Do you have anything that can advance and charge? Do you have any redeployment tricks?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, but I don't know if they, what the questions are, but I had like a list of go-tos in my mind, and I don't know if they've been changed. I haven't looked at the game through that lens yet, or this version of the game.
Yeah, no, I think that's important, because definitely there's going to be a lot of, oh, well, this is how it used to work. And it's like, that's great. I understand that. I mean, I would, a lot of things would take me through that to a certain extent. Well, yeah, of course, this is how it used to work. But people need to, you know, it's no longer how it used to work. It's how it works now. And that's what's important. We're all going to get there together. It's not a race to who gets there first.
I was having a debate with some friends. They're going to know exactly as soon as they hear the show what I'm talking about. You know, about the whole reserves and deep strike thing. It's like what it says in the main rule book versus what, you know, you're going to see in the like the mission notes and that kind of stuff. And they were convinced, because I think they were implying, and their brains were inserting, I guess, logic, you know, one thing, of course, but also what was like vestigial from the last time they had read those rules in the previous edition. And that's a tough one. That's a tough one to overcome.
There has to be something said for a rule being clearly stated in a core rule book, and then there being a different thing released. Yeah, upon the day. Yeah, exactly right. So drawing conclusions from the core rulebook is perfectly reasonable. But like I said at the start, no one should be asserting anything as absolutes.
Got to walk cautiously into the debates. Like, hey, preface everything. I might be wrong here, but let's open up and see how this plays out.
Sure. I mean, you know, along with that, between the players and everything, I'd say be kind to your TOs, right? Because you can ask a lot of questions, and they're learning too.
And I think understanding that other people are probably well intended, but are also having the same struggles at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
this is a collective experience that we're going through with this edition change. And, you know, we joke, you know, some of the jokes in the big tournament coming up soon, you know, is like, I guess we'll just learn to play the edition at that tournament.
Right. Oh yeah. I'll be there at ATC. No worries.
Well, I was saying any tournament, like the next big tournament you're going to is like, it's probably going to be the one that you really learn the edition.
But I mean, that doesn't work for some people. Some people aren't happy to jump in like that and want a really thorough understanding before they even sign up to anything. Mm-hmm. And we need to make space and respect that too.
It's true.
Yeah. Even the game store forums or whatever, discords, I said forums, like those, I know they exist every now and then, but I feel like every time I say forums that I age myself 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. You are, what are you, like 52?
That's the last time I said forums. Yes. Now it's getting up to, it's moving along. Oh my goodness. But yeah, it's going to be a journey, like with the rules and stuff like that. And with the difference, with the extra rules on almost every unit, it's like how many units now, this is just your bolter unit and they just fire bolters and move 6 inches. I don't think it exists really. Well, it doesn't exist in any huge capacity. Everything's got some little, which I like by the way, but everything's got some little trick.
I'm finding there are some people struggling with this also, because while I think it's great that G-Dub took away a huge amount of the stratagems, they essentially gave every single unit in the gang their own kind of unique stratagem. Doesn't cost you the CP, but every single data sheet has something unique on it that it does. And at the start of this edition, it's going to be a lot to absorb in a very short amount of time for some people.
But I kind of like that though. I
love it from a game perspective. I love it from the fact that every unit feels unique. We don't just have 12 versions of a Space Marine that moves a 6 with a variant of a bolter, you know, like to your point. They all do something nuanced and different. But man, oh man, is that daunting to think about, wow, just the Space Marine book has 100 units and they all do something now. Before they all had like 10 different stratagems you could use on them, and sure, that was a weighty thing to come to terms with at the time also. But jumping in where everyone has every single data sheet in the game technically has like its own unique stratagem thing, spicy, flavorful thing that it does. Whew, it's a lot.
But I do like back in the day, you know, granted there were only like 3 or 4 codexes a year, you know, so you could absorb the information at a little bit more relaxed pace. But when I would read all the codexes, of course, to know what my opponents were capable of doing, and having all that stuff on a single card, you know, basically most of what that unit can do is right there on that card. It's easier for me to, I think, log it in my brain to what my expectations of what that is, instead of having to flip through, you know, go back 5 pages, go up 8 pages, you know, all over different sections of the book, try to just figure out what can happen with these collections of figures. I like it being right there on the page, but we will see how that all plays out. This is going to be a little bit like the Wild West, I think, for the next little bit, but this is like one of the exciting parts. I keep mentioning that, but I'm truly enthusiastic of playing and going through and looking at all the, like, what my collections and the indexes and what I can make out of, like, what I already have, because I've found that each time there's a rewrite, there's typically like one old model that either gets a glow up or something you hadn't filled it on, put it on the table in a while, is get new life breathed into it. Fire prisons being one of them, like Wraith Knights. I don't want to go to the Boil of the Aldari, because I think it's going to be a subject that people also tread carefully around. But like chimeras.
Mean? No. What do you mean? What's going on with the Aldari? We don't want to talk about it? Okay.
Look, there's a Fate dice are strong. They're very strong. So, you know, things, some cool looking models in that range that might be on the table pretty soon. But even like going back to the, like the Hydras and that kind of stuff, like, do you break them out? Manicores. What is the right version of, or the right ratio of indirect fire? Do you even need indirect fire? That's the kind of like combination I like to try to unlock. I don't have any answers yet, though. Just like everybody, I'm in the trenches with everyone else right now, trying to figure out what I'm going to take. Although, again, I did paint the three engine sears. They had been previously hanging out in the bits box. Well, with the engine sears, they give a, you know, tanks of 4+ invulnerable. What's not to like about that? I figure I can't not include these in a list. But they have more to come on that. I don't keep talking to Astro Militarum because it's fun to roll around with tanks. I think that's our show for this week.
I'm hyped. Let's do it.
This may be the final vacation episode. We may, by the next we start again, we will be in our seasonal rotation, and more to come on that. Thanks to everybody who joined us on Patreon. Thanks to everybody who has leaves comments on the YouTube page. Thanks to everybody who's leaving the 5-star reviews. That is an absolute hassle-free way for you to interact with the show and kind of spread love through the algorithms. We really appreciate it. We did release the previous episode early to the patrons. I don't know that, I can't promise that's going to happen all the time. I just had it ready and figured why not do it as a treat to the folks that have come on that side of the journey with us. But again, even it says right there on the Patreon, all of our normal episodes are going to be just always out to everybody. But just want to mention that did happen. This is something that can happen every now and then as a perk. And I think we're going to see y'all next week or the week after. Looking forward to getting into this content. We'll see y'all.
See ya.
Bye, everybody.
Horseback scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.